From the flooded heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Last hour of the program tonight, Scary Stories with Michael Teitelbaum. I'm not kidding. 30 straight hours of rain here in the St. Louis area and the Midwest just getting pelted. If you want to take a look at what it looks like on radar, go to weatherunderground.com and just clip look at the Missouri portion of the map. Underwater. Here's what's happening, though. Well, as we've been reporting, a NASA spacecraft will deliberately crash into the moon in about 6.5 hours from now on a mission that could enhance the prospects of establishing a manned lunar base one day. Only 2 weeks after three probes discovered water on the moon, the Lunar Crater Observation and Sensing Satellite, LaCrosse, will blast two huge chunks out of its surface to establish itself whether water exists in a form that could be exploited by astronauts. In the early hours of Friday, the LaCrosse probe will separate from the Centaur upper stage of the rocket that carries it to lunar orbit and send the space module crashing into the crater at the moon's south pole. When the 2-point-ton Centaur hits at 7:30 a.m. Eastern time at a speed of 1.6 miles per second, it will throw up a plume of debris 6 miles high. If you don't have an opportunity to see this with a telescope, just go to coasttocoastam.com and click our link, and you'll be able to watch it live. And NASA says the chances of an 885-foot asteroid striking Earth in 2036 have been downgraded. That's good news. Scientists initially believed that there was a 1 in 45,000 chance that Apophis could hit the planet on April 13th, 2036. But NASA said the threat has been dropped to 1 in 250,000 after it recalculated the asteroid's path. Earth got a scare in 2004 when initial readings suggested the newly discovered Apophis seemed to have a chance of hitting in 2029. Further observations ruled out any possibility of an impact. Apophis, scheduled to make a close but harmless approach in 2029. This email in from Dr. Ed in California says, George, about 5 a.m. this morning, I was getting ready for some sleep, and I happened to catch some of the news in town, and yet another major water break. And now some police officers got sick due to some kind of untraceable smell in one of the L.A. areas. These are indications of fault line motion in that area and suggest something bigger could be on the horizon. Perhaps it would be prudent just to give a shout-out to L.A. area listeners to at least check their emergency supplies just in case. Dr. Ed, good idea. Engineers hope an early warning system being installed at the Large Hadron Collider could provide incidents of the kind which shut the machine down last year, the helium leak last September, resulted from a faulty splice between magnets, and it's delayed the start of the science operations by more than a year. Officials aim to restart the collider, known as the LHC, sometime in mid-November. Walter Wagner graduated from Berkeley with a minor in physics. He's been watching CERN for us. Walter, what do you think of this thing? They're going to ever get it up and running?
Yeah, it looks like they've got it going there, George. They've been doing cool down for the last couple months. And probably about tomorrow they should have it chilled down to where they're supposed to have it, 1.9 degrees Kelvin.
Still concerned about the possibility of creating black holes? What do you think?
Issues that were raised are still there. The possibility that a micro black hole will be formed is still there, has not been eliminated, and the possibility that they might form a strangelet is still there, and that has not been eliminated yet either.
This damage, Walter, that they sustained a year ago must have been severe, huh?
It was a fairly large explosion that they had when the coupling between two magnets lost superconductivity. It very rapidly overheated, and that then caused the coupling as a whole to get very hot and melt and cause an explosion, and then the helium in the area volatilized and caused a larger explosion and sort of ripped the magnets off the concrete floor mountings they were on at that location. And the time. There wasn't anybody in the region, so nobody was hurt.
All right, Walter, we'll check back with you when that Large Hadron Collider is officially turned on. While concern over the spread of the H1N1 virus sweeps across the country, epidemiologists in New York and a few other cities that were awash in swine flu last spring are detecting very little evidence of a resurgence. Although flu season will not peak until the weather gets cold, in New York especially, which was the nation's hardest hit city, officials say that flu activity is no higher than it normally is at the time of year and that school attendance is normal. As the first wave of swine flu vaccine crosses the country, listen to this. More than a third of the parents don't want their kids vaccinated. Some parents say they are concerned about side effects from the new vaccine, while others say the swine flu doesn't amount to any greater health threat than the seasonal flu. And they're probably right on both fronts. A resident hall advisor at a small Christian school was removed from his position for performing what he said was an exorcism on a fellow student that he decided was possessed by the devil. Nathan Mallory, a junior at the Berry College in Georgia, was hosting a Bible study in his dorm room back a few weeks ago when he noticed a female student behaving oddly. The unidentified woman, who has since transferred to another school, was repeating the word no as the other students around her sang hymns. Well, Mallory decided that her behavior was a sign of demonic possession, and he began to pray with her. That's when it showed itself, he said. Her face changed right in front of me, and the most evil, hideous grin came on her face, and her eyes seemed to turn red. He prayed the Holy Spirit would take over. He said it did. Berry College, however, criticized his actions. The dean of the students said a school campus is an inappropriate place for an exorcism and removed him from his post. In Daytona Beach, Florida, more than 30 cats were rescued from a house fire sparked by carpenter ants. Fire department said 9 cats were killed. 2 were rushed to an emergency vet's office. The fire department said the fire was started by some carpenter ants that were building a nest in a wall when they ate through and hit an electrical outlet. In Jacksonville, Florida, authorities have found the body of a 71-year-old woman after wading through a Jacksonville, Florida home filled with garbage piled 8 feet high. Officers were checking on Karina DeCampo after worried family members called to say they haven't heard from her in weeks. They were met with what police called unbelievable squalor and a stench that made the officers sick. After trying to search for about 20 minutes, they had to call in for help. The fire department arrived using breathing gear and search dogs, and they found DeCampo. A British schoolboy has been hailed as the new Mozart, even though he has only been playing the piano for about 4 months. The 10-year-old Shane Thomas practices for only 4 hours a week, but already composes classical music scores in his head. His first, sat down at a piano at the age of 7, and he could play almost instantly by ear. Is that amazing once he got going? In a moment, we're going to be talking with Ingrid Dean. Amazing stories from the front line of law enforcement, shaped by what some say were angels, apparitions, dreams, intuition. This is going to be a great ride on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Ingrid Dean, detective sergeant, forensic artist, 20-year police veteran in the Michigan State Police. She's also the author of Spirit of the Badge, 60 True Police Stories of Divine Guidance, Miracles, and Intuition. Her book began as a culminating project for a master's degree in transpersonal psychology and related studies. And this project grew as more police officers began to share their extraordinary stories, resulting and a very informative and delightful collection of heartwarming experiences. Here she is. And later on tonight, we'll be bringing in some officers and perhaps one victim about these incredible stories. Ingrid, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
You too. You know, we have a huge law enforcement audience listening to this program, so I bet they're going to be very fascinated with what you've done here.
Well, I'm so excited to be here.
I think you gave me a ticket once when I was living in that area. No, I'm kidding. My sister went to Michigan State. Where were you located primarily?
I'm in Traverse City, Michigan right now, but I was born in Detroit, raised in Detroit, and then in Florida for a few years, and then came back to the Detroit area and actually attended Wayne State University.
I went to U of D.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. I get back every once in a while. My parents are still there and my two sisters are still there. But this automobile industry thing has really taken its toll out there, hasn't it?
Oh, you're telling me. And not just in that industry, but in the government. We're going through some pretty hard financial times right now.
Yeah, sure. Tell me how you got interested in being a police officer. How did that happen?
Oh, I wanted to be of service to people and to experience every aspect of the human condition. So this is what my book, Spirit of the Badge, is all about. Consciously or unconsciously, I believe that fellow police officers are in police work because it drives us to both ends of the human spectrum. I think we see a very broad view of the human being, from the traumatic to the compassionate, and with all the transpersonal and unexplainable experiences in between.
Did you have some close calls yourself as a police officer?
I sure did. I flipped cars, banged them up, chased people. Sure. I've had a wonderful array of experiences in my profession.
Ingrid, ever shot at?
Fortunately not.
Thank God.
I have had to draw my gun a couple times, but fortunately have been unhurt and only had a couple scrapes and bruises from a couple car crashes, but other than that, I've been doing pretty well.
I went to a barbecue a few weeks ago with some St. Louis police officers, and these folks are incredible. I mean, first of all, we have a great respect for law enforcement, but they had some great stories. And I got to tell you, Ingrid, they eat anything they can find, and they cook it.
We love food.
as I accuse them that they eat roadkill as well. So.
Well, perhaps.
Now, how did you get interested in the Spirit of the Badge, which is the title of your book? How did you evolve into this area?
You know, after 15 years, I was getting maybe a little bit bored and wanted something new, and I decided to go back to school. There was some synchronicity, some timing. There was sort of this unsatiable personal urge to show that police officers are human too. And I ended up going to school, and I decided to do this project for my master's degree. And I would question officers and see what kinds of stories, unexplainable, unusual situations that they had been in, and see what sort of collection I could compile.
And you compiled some great ones.
Oh, they're wonderful. And I was so pleasantly surprised because the type of material I was looking for was unexplainable situations, miracles that happen in our everyday life. And so I wasn't sure that police officers would go for this. But really, they were more than happy to share. They were open. They knew that I was working on this research project, and it was wonderful. I received over 100 stories and then had to actually decide what I wanted for this book.
Always good to have more than less. Did you think, though, for a moment that they weren't going to contribute or they were going to be holding back because they just didn't want anybody to know that they had these kinds of experiences?
I thought at first that they would hesitate somewhat because we are in a conservative type profession and we tend to be shy. We really just want to be of service to people, and we have, you know, credibility and reliability issues that we want to stand on, especially in court and situations. And I was just floored at the experiences that they shared and their openness with me. And I think part of it is because I am a police officer, and they could trust me. They knew I wasn't going to embarrass them. So the more we talked, the more I sent out flyers and made telephone calls, the more stories came through.
You know, it's a little like pilots who see UFOs who hold back because they just don't want to tell anybody. They think it's going to affect their careers. But all of a sudden, when you get a pilot who does some research into the field, because we know that pilots do see strange objects, they seem to open up a little bit more. So that's probably what happened with you.
Yeah, and I think that our language, the way we come across and project ourselves and how we question, it determines if people are going to be open as well. You know, if I would have approached police officers and said, now I want to hear about all of your angel encounters and have you ever seen a UFO? And if I was that direct, I don't think they would have been as open.
Tell me a little bit about transpersonal psychology. What is that?
Transpersonal means beyond the person. And it really refers to anything ordinary, extraordinary, metaphysical, paranormal, synchronistic, any sorts of altered states of consciousness, all the various conditions that are still mysteries about our human psyche, that go beyond our five senses. And police officers, believe it or not, they go way beyond their five senses in order to fix a situation. We're under such stress sometimes that we will listen to anything that comes through, whether it's ideas, intuitive feelings, gut feeling is a common word that police officers use. And that's all transpersonal. That's going beyond themselves and sort of understanding innately that they are bigger than what we appear to be.
Well, and you're right. They have to be intuitive. You know, Hollywood, Ingrid, portrays most police officers in movies, for example, when they're chasing some criminal or it's a horror type film, as always not being intuitive, you know, barging into a room and they get shot. And I was just watching one earlier tonight that, some guy was hiding out in a convenience place at night and they had the officers just barge right in. That's not the case. Most police officers I know are pretty darn intuitive, and I'm sure you find the same thing.
They are, and the media, they really only give one perspective of the policeman. They really don't look very deeply at the human behind the badge. We have to use our intuition. We have to integrate that in our education, in our experience, in our years of training. And if we don't do that, I think we're a pretty watered-down police officer. In order to stay safe and to protect the public and to really be of service, I think we have to integrate intuition and all those extra things, the sixth sense, that gut feeling. It's part of our job and it's part of our makeup.
Have you used this gut feeling in your own profession for yourself?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, we have to be co-creators in the world and kind of work in the moment as we go with situations. And I remember one time when this bullet fell from my visor above my head and it fell into my hand just as I was getting ready to stop a vehicle. Now I could totally ignore that and not think anything of it. And maybe my partner put it there or whatever, mm-hmm. But I really feel like we get signals, symbolic signals all the time if we're open to it. And in my book, Spirit of the Badge, there are several stories in which police officers respond to those symbols. If a book falls off the shelf, take time to look at the title. You know, maybe it's telling you something. So getting back to this bullet that fell in my hand, I was stopping a car at the same time, and I thought, you know, this could be a clue that I should be extra cautious. And sure enough, by the time I got through with the traffic stop, this person had a warrant out for trying to kill a police officer. And so I attribute that symbol, that bullet that fell in my hands, as having something to do with the way I approach the driver.
Absolutely.
You know, friendly.
Up next, Ingrid, we're going to talk about your book, Spirit of the Badge, and we'll also bring in a victim by the name of Tim on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Richard C. Hoagland, our science advisor, head of the EnterpriseMission.com, continues to monitor the La Crosse moon mission. He said everything is rolling along well. The spacecraft has separated from the Spent Stage Booster, the Centaur itself, and he is monitoring that. And he sent me a little note and said, I hope you enjoy watching this later with your telescope. Richard, it's been raining here for 30 hours straight. The clouds are so thick, I won't get through to see the moon tonight. I'm going to watch it on coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Our guest tonight, Ingrid Dean, author of Spirit of the Badge, Incredible Police Stories of Divine Guidance, Miracles, and Intuition. Ingrid, tell us, before we go to Tim, tell us, as you were getting these stories, as you said, 100 of them came in, you kept 60 for your book. How did you solicit them? From just Michigan State Police or all over the country?
All over the country. I thought that every police officer needs to be represented, and it doesn't matter what agency they're in, whether it's a state police, the sheriff's department, the city police. I just wanted to show the service that we do and to invite any officer to contribute. I got stories from California and Washington State, Florida, Utah, and, of course, Michigan and the Midwest. So the stories come from all over. And it was all due to flyers going out, emails, support from friends who were police officers who encouraged other police officers to contact me. So it really was a joint effort, a collective effort in this whole process.
When we take phone calls with you later on tonight, I'll open up a special hotline for police officers to call in to share some more stories.
Great. That'd be great.
That'll be book number two for you.
Super.
Set the stage. Tell me about Tim Grimm. And his story was called Breaking the Rules.
Yes. And what's so special about that story is that I am the officer that was involved in this incident. It's a story that I contributed. Tim Grimm, synchronistically, 2 days ago, walked into my office, and I hadn't seen him for over 15 years. 15 years ago, I was just a trooper in uniform, stopped a car that was speeding, going over 100 miles an hour. When I stopped the cars, the driver and the passenger, husband and wife, jumped out of the car, ran up to my patrol car and said, our son has been stung by a bee.
Oh my.
And he's going into anaphylactic shock. What was so scary is that it was around Cherry Festival time. Traffic was all backed up in my area. We had just had a hospital closed down, and they were headed to the wrong hospital. So in short, I just had the young man put in my car. The parents were in my car, and we hauled off to the hospital. I named the story Breaking the Rules because we were not supposed to do that. I was not supposed to do that. It was against my departmental policies.
And I bet you were driving at least 80 miles an hour. Had to.
As fast as I could go.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's bring Tim in, and we'll chat with him with you, Ingrid. Hi, Tim. How are you?
Good. How about yourself?
Good. Thanks. Thanks for being on the program for this portion. So tell us what happened, Tim, in your own words.
From the beginning?
Well, yeah, pick it up from where Ingrid left off.
Well, I was in complete blindness at the time. I could hear voices and noises around me. I could hear my mom screaming. And next thing you know, I could feel myself being lifted up and carried into a car. And next thing I know, I hear Mrs. Dean yelling something, and I couldn't really understand at the time. So,
and, was the bee, Tim, in the car when you got stung?
No, actually, when I got stung, me and my friend Russell were actually playing at my house, and we were playing around this old stump, and it flustered some of the bees, and they actually attacked me and stung me 3 times. So.
Oh, my. Okay, so in the car you go. Parents are taking you to the wrong hospital.
Yep.
Thank God Ingrid was there when she was there. And what happens? Ingrid, you get to the hospital. What happens?
You know, I get to the hospital, and we rush him in there. Eventually, the doctors take over, and I leave. And really, it's just part of my day. You know, I knew that he was hurting, but that he was going to be okay. He was in good hands. And so by the time I came home that night and turned the news on, I thought everything was fine. But the doctors were on the news, and they made the comment that if the police officer hadn't brought this boy in so quickly, he would have died.
And, Tim, all these years now, how do you feel about all this? What has happened in your life? I'm sure there have been events that there's a reason you're still here.
Oh, there's a bunch of things that's happened. You know, I've enjoyed my life. You know, I'm with my family, and, you know, a few things have happened where, you know, I'm glad I was there to help people out, and, you know, I'm just glad to be alive.
Kind of reminds me of the movie It's a Wonderful Life, where George Bailey wanted to end his life, and the angel came back and told him, wait a minute, if you weren't around, look at all these people that would be affected. I guess sometimes, Tim, if we sit back and say, you know what, had I died from a bee sting, I wonder what would have happened to all these other people, all these lives that I've touched because I've been around here. It's kind of a sobering thought, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
And Ingrid, in your particular case, was there intervention here? Was there guidance? Tell me the miracle.
The miracle was that it happened so quickly, and I was so divinely guided that I hardly even remember it, in the sense that I just moved with it, and quickly, thank God. I knew when I saw him, when he was in the car, that we had a problem, a real problem, because I could see his throat was swelling up, and he was wheezing. So I responded to the moment, which is really what police work is all about. It's all the stories that are in the book, including Timmy's in Spirit of the Badge, or how we respond to the moment. We don't always understand exactly why we do things. We just do it. And in this case, I felt it was certainly divine intervention or a universal message to just go with it, go with the moment.
You ever stop to think, Ingrid, that maybe you were the angel?
No. You know, you don't think that way. You know, police officers feel like they're here to be of service. And, you know, I certainly can't speak for fellow officers, but when we're doing that job, we're not thinking about being special or being an angel and such. We're there to get that job done, to help that person and to be of service. And this is what I don't think that our media projects very well. They really don't come across as if we're there to help. You know, I always hear all those bad stories. But that's why we get into this work. We're to be of service. And in Tim's case, that's what I was there for.
Well, Timothy, you've got this opportunity in front of a national audience to just, I guess, tell Ingrid how you have felt over all these years about this. Go ahead.
Well, honestly, I'll come out with it. You know, I wouldn't be here. I appreciate, you know, everything that you did for me. My family appreciates, I mean, not just my mother and father and my sister. I mean, my whole family. And, I mean, it's just, you were there at the perfect, absolutely perfect time. And without you, I wouldn't be here. And, well, you saved my life, and I would just like to say I have 100% gratitude towards you, and I thank you for what you did.
You are so sweet. And, you know, you're handsome, you're smart, and when you came into the office there and you said, hello, do you remember me? And I said, well, no. And then you said, well, you saved my life. I knew exactly who you were. So thank you so much for being on the show today. It's just absolutely wonderful talking to you.
It's not a problem at all because, you know, honestly, you saved my life. So I would do probably absolutely anything for you. So,
well, bless your heart. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim, for coming on the show.
Not a problem.
That's pretty remarkable, isn't it?
Nice young man. It was worth it. It was worth it. It really makes your day as a police officer that at least there was one soul that you helped.
Well, you know what? I bet you have helped and officers have helped so many people in their lives that they probably can't remember how many lives they've touched just by doing what they do every day, you know?
I think you're right. You know, when I collected these stories for Spirit of the Badge, at first, the officers thought, well, I don't know if I can remember an exceptional human experience. And I said, oh, come on. You know, every day, like, you know, when you save someone or you find a lost child or what have you. And then they started to remember. But they had to think about it because every day we're constantly challenged to do our job. So it's not something we think about. We just do it. We live the moment.
We'll get into some more of these stories, incredible stories, and then each half hour we'll bring in another person involved. The next three will be police officers. And then, like I said, we'll open up a special hotline later on for police officers only to call you with perhaps their own stories, and then general phone calls as well from our vast listenership that just loves these kinds of stories, Ingrid. I mean, it tells you something about the world we live in, the universe we live in, that there's something else out there, doesn't it?
That's right.
You know, when you were getting your responses, I guess it was difficult to weed out the extra 40 in order to get the 60, huh?
Oh, it really was, because all their stories were very touching. They weren't just about unexplainable phenomena and synchronicity and such, but they were stories that were ordinary, but that's what made them extraordinary. So you're right, weaving through those stories and deciding which ones to put in the book was not easy because they were all so good.
Phenomenal. It's a great, I've already had 9 requests for the copy of the book I have. They want it.
That's good.
Well,
great.
It's good for you. I want your take on what you think divine guidance is. What's out there?
I think divine guidance is being open in the moment. You know, when I was inspired, got that sudden inspiration to write this book, I had mentioned that I went back to school. I went out to Virginia. I went to a police seminar about 5 years ago, and I ran into this man in a hotel computer room who was there because he was speaking at an Edgar Casey conference, completely different conference. We only spoke for 5 minutes, and he only told me that his name was Michael. But I could tell instantly, just like in police work, being in the moment, that there was something significant about him, about that situation. I don't know why this happens every 10 or so years in my life, but I recognized suddenly that he was a pivotal person in my life. There was a light about him. So in just those few minutes, he somehow dropped the idea in my head to return to school to pursue spiritual studies. This was the beginning of a new life for me, so to speak. It was something exciting other than police work. And as it turns out, this man was Michael Murdad, just a wonderful healer, modern-day spiritual teacher and author, very well known for bringing miracles into people's lives. And as this pivotal person, he had a profound effect on this book. Just by my going back to school and listening, being open to divine guidance. That divine guidance is really being in the moment and being receptive to the signals that life gives. And in that moment, he was a signal. There was something about him. I looked him up, and we kept in touch ever since. And I've been to a few of his seminars, and he's just absolutely wonderful about the topic of mastery and how we can all be masters, we can all be autonomous, and make miracles. You know, that's what life's all about.
Throughout the night, I'll ask you to pick up a story or two from your book, Beyond the Officers, that will be coming in and out tonight as well. What might be one of your favorite stories?
I love the story called The Lost Badge.
Lost
Badge is about an officer who loses his badge in the woods. He happens to be an office, a Department of Natural Resource officer. He works in wildlife. He loses his badge, and after about 3 days, he's about ready to turn himself in and tell his superiors when he is called out to go to a forest about 100 miles north. And the reason being, there's a small tornado or wind shear that knocks all these trees down. And so his job is to see what sort of damage has occurred. So he travels 100 miles north. He's climbing through all of these fallen trees and limbs because he sees this eagle's nest in the distance. And he's thinking to himself, oh, you know, there might be birds in the nest that I need to save and to take to a shelter. So he takes great pains to get to this nest. Fortunately, there's no birds in the nest, but as he's picking through the sticks, he sees something very shiny. And when he pulls it out, it's actually his badge. It's his badge with his number on it. I kid you not, true story.
I love it. My line producer, Tom Danheiser, who called you and got you on the line tonight, his late father was a sergeant out here in the L.A. Police Department, Walter Danheiser, and his family has his badge and his artifacts and some great police stories coming from that family as well. Police officers are everywhere, aren't they?
They are, and sometimes you don't even know they're police officers because they're human beings. You know, that's what we forget. When we watch television and we see that uniform, we think these are robots. These are, you know, the very uniform makes them look like they're conformists, when really we're human beings behind that badge.
You know, it's interesting, too, Ingrid, that it's a tough job. Society has made it even tougher, where nowadays it's the perpetrator, the criminal, who gets the benefit of the doubt rather than the police officer. And I'm sure some officers over time have overstepped their bounds, of course. We all know these stories. But by and large, most police officers are there to do a job, and it's a very difficult job. But the criminal seems to get most of the rights these days.
Oh, my gosh. Doesn't it seem like they have a lot more rights than we do?
Yeah.
Very frustrating on the police end of things.
Well, we'll be back in just a moment. We'll continue talking with some other police officers about some of their real stories that have been contributed to your book. Up next will be a police officer who contributed the story Angel's Shield. Ingrid's website, spiritofthebadge.com. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.